From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Fremont.
Yo, I'm San Jose, just downtown.
Coming up, we get in front of the class with a first-time teacher at Oakland High.
How do we slow it down so that the kids can understand, but also meet this pace? It's like this super fast beat on the metronome, and you're trying to keep up with it. And you know that you're losing kids along the way.
We'll hear her very personal perspective on what it means to teach.
I've given everything away. Like, everything is gone. The gas tank is below empty.
Then we'll get a lesson on what the Oakland Unified School District is facing from outgoing Superintendent Tony Smith.
We're trying to do everything we can for children in contexts that many folks can't even imagine.
We're squeezing in some last-minute schooling before summer today on Cross Currents.
My name is Diana Arbus. I'm 27, and I'm a student teacher at Oakland High School.
Diana Arbus is learning to become a teacher. She's in a master's program at Mills College, where in order to earn her degree, she has to tackle a real classroom. She has the guidance of a more experienced mentor, her coordinating teacher, or CT. But the goal is for her to be able to stand on her own. The student body at Oakland High is made up of kids from very diverse backgrounds. Many come from some of the roughest neighborhoods in the city. Some kids face barriers to learning, and not all of them start high school at the same level.
When I first started out, I wasn't prepared. I didn't expect that students would come in not knowing what I considered basic things. Like, you sit in the seat that's assigned to you. You write your name on every assignment. And when an assignment is done in class, you complete it.
Today we're going to hear Diana's radio diary of her first year teaching at Oakland High in a ninth grade English class and her reflections on what that year has been like now that it's coming to an end. Here's Diana.
So first and second period is the same set of students. First period is writing workshop, and second period is English for the ninth grade. And my CT, she taught everything. And that first week was more about get to know the curriculum and get to know the students. And every week, it was just about taking on more and more. I think I had 6 weeks to go from zero to, you know, taking over for a week. And so as I'm taking over the classroom, I'm also preparing all this work to get my teaching credential in the state of California. Oh, also, I have been a full-time grad student this entire time. So I took 3 grad seminars.
7:18 a.m. And, oh man, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. But I have to. A bus is coming in less than half an hour.
I would wake up at 6:30, 6:45, just kind of have that hour at home to just pull everything together, and, you know, shower, have coffee, maybe breakfast if there was time, and I would rush out the door to catch my bus. So we would get to the classroom 8:10, class starts at 8:15, and at noon I would have to go and catch my bus. And then I would just go to Mills. 1 o'clock is the seminar. And that would end at 7:30, 8. And then I would go home. I would crash. There's just so much going on. I was learning how to be a teacher, but I was also learning how to be a researcher. But I was also being on my own, like coming out of a relationship. And I moved twice in the fall. And I had to rebuild my support system at home, my personal support system. It was just too much. And that's what was surprising to me, is even though I was prepared, or I knew it would be difficult, it was so much more difficult than what I expected.
It's Tuesday,
December 18. So today, student teaching. At this point, at the end of the semester, when I'm just so, I've given everything away. Like, everything is gone. The gas tank is below empty. I wish we could move at a much slower pace. I wish we could really take the time to go deeply into it and talk about why it matters, because I think that's where everything should start. I've just felt this pressure to accomplish 3 bullet points by the end of the given period so that we will be on track to do so-and-so assessment. I mean, that's a major question I've had. How do we slow it down so that the kids can understand, but also meet this pace? It's like this super fast beat on the metronome, and you're trying to keep up with it. It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday, December 19. And this morning, the kids were just talking over me, and I was trying to talk over them, and I just didn't want to even stop the class to address behavior, because I felt like it would waste time. And I thought that I would just ignore it. But what it ended up doing was I was just competing with them, and I was just trying to constantly raise my voice over their talking to their friends and try to get through this lesson. And it was like pulling teeth.
So I began with, I think, 35 students. And over time, like, I've lost students to suspension, to habitual truancy. They are on the roster. Their name is on the roster. But they just don't come to class. Where are they?
It's Thursday, December 20. It's about 1 o'clock. Not everyone showed up to class today, but let's just say maybe 30 students were in class, and only 16 students turned in work. And of the 16, maybe only 4 students completed a significant amount of the outline. I'm baffled, because maybe they're just so overwhelmed by the material that they just gave up on it. They can't even bring themselves to start. I'm just overwhelmed right now by the range of ability in the class. I feel like if I had conferences, like individual conferences with each student, that would do so much good. So much more would be done there than a 59-minute period where I try to help everybody.
There was just so much to process. So much to process. And how do I even explain this? So I have students at many different levels of reading. And when we read a book together in class, they're often so stuck in just, like, decoding the text into words that they don't get plot, or they can't go to analysis, which is what I want all my students to do, is to analyze the literature. But they're just so busy taking those words and turning them into pictures in their head, and they're stuck at this level, and there's just too much to absorb.
It's Friday, December 21, and it was the last day of student teaching of fall 2012, and it feels amazing. Oh my gosh, what a semester.
Oh, I'm so nice. I'm such a nice person, and I can't be nice. I can't be nice in there. It's like I took how nice I am to the classroom, and all year long we've been cutting away at that. Because nice doesn't cut it. And what I've learned is if I let people jerk me around in my personal life and I don't stand up for myself, it's that much harder to come into the classroom and enforce, like, no eating in the classroom, no cell phones. And it's just, I am either, you know, a doormat or a woman who doesn't take in all areas of my life. It just has to, it has to be consistent all across the board.
I think what I've learned in the hardest way this fall is I need to take care of myself. And before I can be a good teacher, I need to be a happy, healthy person on my own. I need to get enough sleep. I need to eat regularly and well. I need to exercise. I need to have a life outside of student teaching. And I need to go to therapy. I need to take care of myself before I can take care of 35 kids who have a variety of needs. I'm just so sorry that I had to watch myself teach poorly in order to learn that. I don't know, maybe I'm being too hard on myself. That's what I need to learn. I need to learn how to be kind to myself, but also push myself. So, I don't know. But student teaching is done, and I look forward to the clean slate that spring 2013 will bring. And I'll enter it as a second semester student teacher. So, I'll be a better teacher.
Diana Arbus is a student teacher at Oakland High School. Her diary was produced by Martina Castro with help from Melissa Kapnick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Karen Gordon, and Mary Willis. Tune in tomorrow to hear how Diana tackles classroom management.
Today, I called parents at home. Now, nobody in my program told me that calling parents at home because their child is misbehaving in class, nobody told me that is one of the most awful experiences you can have as a teacher. Like, nobody told me that.
That's tomorrow in Diana's Teacher Diaries. We'd like to hear what you think of Diana's experiences. You can call us at 415-264-7106 and just leave us a message. That number again is 415-264-7106. And if you are a teacher, we'd love to hear about your own experiences, and we'll try to feature your story on the air. Just heard about some of the challenges of teaching in Oakland Public Schools. Well, leading the district isn't easy either. Oakland Unified, or OUSD, has seen its share of upheaval over the past decade. In 2003, the state took control of OUSD after a series of financial missteps. In 2009, local control was returned to the district with the understanding that it would pay back the nearly $90 million in debt to the state. That was 2 days before Tony Smith took office as superintendent. Since then, Smith has tried to turn the district around on multiple levels. He's overseen an improved school budget, which last year had no deficit. However, a recent state audit found 44 flaws in accounting, record-keeping, and fiscal management. During his tenure, Smith implemented a radical 5-year plan to create full-service community schools, providing enrichment, health, and social services to students and their families. That's in addition to academics. He's also closed some schools, sometimes controversially. Last summer, protesters camped out for 3 weeks at Lakeview Elementary to protest its closure and to demand Smith's resignation. In April of this past year, Smith announced that he will, in fact, resign, citing family reasons. I met with him to talk about his term as superintendent, the road ahead for Oakland schools, and his educational philosophy.
I think if we're serious about every single child in a city being well-known, well-cared for, and successful, then the public school system has to be uncommonly good, because we're largely the sole responsible organization for educational outcomes and well-being of children. So we should be clear that the outcome isn't just a higher test score, it's a healthier city. And I think we've made extraordinary progress in that regard to work with really thoughtful leaders across multiple systems to start to do that. And we made huge gains in terms of high school graduation, holding on to kids, in the context of the city that's, we have the highest robbery rate, one of the highest murder and assault rates. We have so many guns, the violence, the number of children that are shot. I have such extraordinary respect for my high school principals and the teachers and leaders at the high school campuses who are caring for children who are in such extraordinary trauma. And we're trying to do everything we can for children in contexts that many folks can't even imagine.
Well, Oakland is a city of a lot of divides, and part of the mission of what you're doing is to actually cross some of those divides and explain what it might be like to live in a part of Oakland that does have high crime, for example, versus a part of Oakland that doesn't. But there's still that resource balance, right? There's that sense of some people, say, in the more affluent areas, feeling like, well, my kids deserve the best too. How do you balance that, and how do you communicate?
I think every child deserves the best, right? And John Dewey said, what the best and wisest parent wants for their child, so should we want for all children. A parent who wants the very best for their kid should also know and understand that the very best for their child is not to be sitting in a city where there are children born 2 miles away who are experiencing not only 15 fewer years of life, but trauma and extraordinary upset and challenge on a daily basis. Then that jeopardizes the health and well-being of their child.
How have you attacked that problem?
I think you have to have innovation, because the system itself can't come up with the new thing if it's stuck. So you have to be able to innovate. And sometimes there's important disruption that happens that then you learn from, and that becomes an innovation that systematizes. But you can't just be so stuck and bureaucratic that you won't change. Because if the public system believes that the problem resides in the client, that's where I think we get into a lot of the problems. Like, if you don't come to school ready, that's your fault, and therefore you'll never get what we have to offer in the classroom. So what we've said is you have to create the conditions it's the other side of the community school notion, is that it's a no-excuse school. There's no excuse that kids can't be ready to learn in classrooms. We can feed them, we can get them clothing, we can get them mental health support, we can get mental and dental care, we can get mentors, we can get connectivity, we can work with the housing authority about stable housing. We can do what it takes to get children in conditions and in places where they can take full advantage of high quality instruction. There's no excuse, which we happen to call a community school. So the idea that we can do this together, we have to learn. And so that innovation stuff is, we have to try some different things to get outside of existing agreements, outside of existing definitions. And that gets scary to people, because there's not a lot of good examples of public systems that have had a social justice or a deep equity commitment that actually follow through. And so I get that there are a lot of upset, and you have to be able to demonstrate and deliver different outcomes. That's why it's hard to leave. I mean, we're 4 years in. We've been doing that. When we said we'd close schools, but it would be better, kids would be better off, those kids went to schools where then they had more money per child. We reduced the number of split classes. I mean, all the things we said we were going to do, we did. And that, you have to follow through, and to change the narrative, you actually have to keep doing things and showing that you're going to follow through. So it is hard to leave.
So it feels like right now you're starting to see some of the benefits of these new programs. You're also going to see an increase in your budget for the first time. You know, you've had to be doing cutbacks and dealing with the fallout of the state takeover and having debt. So for everybody who's just listening, Tony is cringing and grimacing right now.
Ouch. Yeah, that it's the first time in many, many years that we're going to see the other side of the work, which is actually getting to fund your priorities as different than cut everything and try to protect the most essential things. I think there's really exciting opportunity to fund and build, particularly in the high school space, and specifically for some of the children who have been least well served. We saw at Oakland Tech, for example, African-American students at Oakland Tech graduated last year at 80%. The other thing is we've got more than 270 children who had been in high school for 4 years last year, but they didn't leave and they didn't graduate. They stayed with us. They're in our high schools because of things that had happened in their lives. There's things that are going on in Oakland that make it hard on young people. But we created the condition where we're not pushing kids out at 18 and we're holding on to them and supporting them. And so we're going to see over time, not only an increase in the graduation rate for the cohort, but we're going to do what it takes to hold on to kids and get them ready for college, career, and community. And that's so the link learning work, having kids really connected to the world of work and connecting curriculum. Yeah, I'm very excited about what's coming.
Let me remind people, you're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm speaking with Tony Smith. He is the superintendent of the Oakland Unified School District, and he's going to be leaving at the end of this month. What do you consider to be, I don't know, some of your greatest achievements in the last 4 years?
I really think the move in the organization, in the district itself, to begin to share resources. And there had been a very intense competition model and really a divide about new school, old school, small school, big school, this kind of school, that kind of school, as different than quality schools that every child deserves. And I think we've changed the narrative in the conversation about creating quality schools in Oakland. And that's all of our responsibility. It's kind of the idea of moving from me to we. This is a place that has attacked the central system and undermines the capacity. Even the last couple of reform efforts were about, quote, blowing up the district. So this has been about building a set of relationships and high capacity, continuous improvement systems that are in relationship with community and the other institutions in both the city and the county.
Did you feel under attack in this position?
Of course. I mean, just the threats on the family, people marching on the house, you know, the very direct personal threats and very direct personal threats on the family. I mean, and people feeling that they could do that with impunity, right? There's just a sense that I think, honestly, that the city of Oakland has to kind of do a gut check. Like, what is it, in fact, that this city wants for its future? And that they need to be much more disciplined about the policy setting and the way in which we proceed, which is there are some really hard decisions to be made, and everybody's got to be at the table, and then people have to hold to that. But the politicking and the grandstanding and the, you know, trying to get people fired up rather than get to a real solution, that's easy. I mean, you can keep getting elected, but nothing changes, and you keep running on how dysfunctional things are. That's a real problem.
Tony Smith is the outgoing superintendent of the Oakland Unified School District. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hana Baba, Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Tiffany Kamhai, Jen Chien, Marco Choi, Leela Day, Ben DeLuca, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Teddy Lederer, Megan Quintana, Christian Rose, Eva Sanson, Brooke Welty, Mary Willis, and Ben Vu. Also, happy birthday to our own Laura Flynn.
Happy birthday, Laura Flynn!
Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. And the band you're hearing now calls themselves Crosscut. Most of the players are from the Bay Area, but their sound is influenced by the blues. Blues from Chicago, Memphis, and the Mississippi Delta. Crosscut will be playing music from their album, also called Crosscut, this Wednesday. They're on stage from 6 to 8 p.m. For Crosscurrents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Well, I was raised down in Memphis. Old Man River Road.